Hello and welcome to the Spooky Chris Podcast. My name is Chris Ringler, your aforementioned Spooky Chris, and I appreciate you joining me today. I am excited to be having a conversation with author J. Luke Benecke, and he is a fascinating guy. He is a master civil engineer who's used that knowledge to craft chilling thrillers that examine how dangerous the systems we rely on and trust can become when exploited by outside forces. He's the author of several books, such as Civil Terror Gridlock, Waterborne, Echo from a Bayou, and this fall, the third book in the Jake Bendel series, Blackout, will be released. Blackout, a Jake Bendel thriller, will be released on October 6th by JTech Publishing. Blackout isn't about fantasy technology or impossible scenarios. It's about asking what happens if people with enough intelligence, funding, and patience target the systems we depend on every day. You can find out more about the book at jlukebenecke.com/blackout. And that's jlukebenecke.com/blackout. Now, sit back and let's have a conversation with this great author. Thank you for joining me, Luke. How are you?
I'm great, Chris. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. I appreciate you making some time. You have a new book coming out this fall, and we'll get to it. But I want to start off and kind of get into kind of where you kind of come from. You were a civil engineer for over 35 years. What got you interested in that as a profession?
Civil engineering, I wanted to be a doctor when I was going to college. I thought, I can help people through medicine, and I wanted to make a lot of money, like a lot of people who are 18. And I was like, Mom, doctor. Yeah, that's it. Little did I know, civil engineers can make a lot more money than doctors.
Oh,
authors can make more money than doctors. All kinds of people can make more money than doctors. And I was at a study group late one night, and I was talking with a guy, and he's like, I'm going to be an engineer. And I'm like, I made some stupid joke because I didn't know what engineering was. Nobody had ever sat down and said, engineers solve problems. There's these different types of engineers and stuff. And he goes, it's really cool. We work with computers and math, and we solve things and we do stuff and we make stuff. And I'm like, that sounds like fun. What do I need to do there? And I switched my major, and the rest is history.
That's amazing. What excited you about that profession? You did it for 35 years. So what kind of kept you going?
I like to create stuff, and it's one of the reasons I write. Probably you do too. But when you have an idea for something like a bridge or a road or a house or a building, in my case, it was the first thing I worked on was a handicap ramp, ADA ramp for a building. I went out there and I surveyed it, and I drew up the plans and stuff. And then these guys went out there and built it. And then I walked around on it, and I'm like, this is really cool. This is something that was in my head, and now it's out here in reality, and people use it, and I'm helping people do stuff with that. And that kind of stuck with me. And so over the 3.5 decades there, bridges and roads and interchanges, same kind of thing. You have an idea, you plan it, you design it, you build it. And then millions of people use what you've built. They drive on it, and they're safe, and they get from point A to point B faster. And it's like a little kind of pat on your back. And of course, I'm part of a team of people. It's not me, but it's a neat feeling to be able to be a part of something that builds something that's there for decades, centuries, possibly.
Was there a project that, if you looked back on your career, that you would want to kind of, that was kind of the highlight?
I've worked on 15 different interchanges here. Wow. In Southern California. And if I had to kind of maybe pick two, the I-210 Ayala interchange in the city of Rialto was in, what's that Bradley Cooper movie where they go out to Vegas? Hangover?
Oh, yeah.
After they had built that, they filmed a number of scenes while they're driving to Las Vegas. It's actually in Rialto. And I was watching that movie. I'm like, Hey, that's one of the bridges I worked on, and that's a retaining wall that I designed, and I didn't know what I was doing, and it's the world's ugliest retaining wall. And it's like, I don't know if we're allowed to use the R word, but it's like a retarded retaining wall. It just kind of, well, I want to go up and down, and it's bad, but it's in the mute movie. And my kids are like, there's dad, there's your retarded retaining wall. I'm like, thank you. Thanks. So I'm known for my retarded re retaining wall in the movie Hangover. So that was cool. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, it's pretty neat. So.
Okay, that's awesome. Now you've worked in bigger cities. What was it like as technology kind of became more and more a part of infrastructure projects?
Yeah, great question. So, when I started out in the early 90s, we were still doing drafting by hand. So it was, vellum paper and Mylars, and everything's is done by with paper and pencil basically. And as I progressed, we had this new thing called CAD, computer-aided drawing, and then you had computer-aided design, and started getting into 3D models at the late 90s. And now everything, a lot of the guys coming into the industry now, they don't know how to draft by hand. They just, this is all they know, and it's way more powerful as a tool. And it's been neat to see the computer-aided drafting and drawing and design systems come online for all different sorts of civil engineering projects, whether it's roads and freeways and bridges like I've worked on, or housing developments, or parks, or train stations, or water systems, or whatever. It's been fascinating to kind of just watch that progress over the decades.
Is there a technology you see kind of, well, I guess the elephant in the room would be AI, but like a technology that's really going to take over the industry?
I think just my gut instinct here, we're already starting to use AI in day-to-day work as a quality control system. I don't think AI is going to be taking over the design and construction of civil engineering in the next 20 or 30 years. I just, even with exponential growth, and that's, I know that's quite a bold statement, but there's too many nuances, in my opinion, for designing and constructing stuff. Yeah, you can have robots, and I can foresee in maybe 10 or 20 years robot workers out in construction, and AI helping with a lot of the different pieces on in a more and more progressive fashion. But you're still going to need somebody there cognitively to kind of oversee and make sure there's just so many pieces for safety and the operations and the efficiencies. And this isn't like a computer program where you're clicking a button and everything's digital. This is real world stuff. This is real concrete and real rocks and real safety hazards and real steel and real welding. It's the people who build bridges, contractors, it's a lot of work. And there's a lot of different components that go into it. So the complexity, I think, is something that would be a significant hurdle. I think AI or AGI would eventually get over it, but not anytime soon.
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Now, what first got you interested in writing?
Oh man, so they say, and you go through part of your life and you're not an author. And then at some point in time, you go through a transition and you're like, I could be an author. I can write at least one book. How hard can it be? And everybody goes through that because you don't, you're 5. You're not writing when you're 5. So somewhere between the age of 5 and w when you're dead, you say, hey, I think I can be an author. And so for me, that was in 2015. And I had an idea for a book. And I was thinking, maybe try, the self-driving cars were kind of coming online, and I started catastrophizing, and I tried to go into the future a little bit, and what if this and what if that. And I thought, I'm a decent writer. I have decent ideas, and I'm pretty good at writing emails and technical reports and stuff. I could write. Now, how hard could that be? So I know you might have heard this story before, but I bought the How to Write Novels for Dummies. And I ate that up and highlighted that and everything. And I figured that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know is how to write. Everything you need to write is to know about writing is in that little book. But that's really only about like 5%, 5 or 10% of what you need to know. And it's a lot of, as you know, since you've published so many books, it's a lot of work to get to the point where you finally have your own voice. And you just don't know that at the beginning. So people can tell you, oh, you don't have your own voice. You sound generic, or you sound like so and so, or whatever. It's not unique. And you don't know what that means until after a while. And they say it's, usually your fourth or fifth book that you've written and edited, where you kind of find because all these different complexities for writing. And how many times do you use italics for what somebody's thinking if you're writing in third person, for example? Or how often do you like to use dialogue, and do you use lots of dialogue tags or none, or all these? There's hundreds of variables, and so you will form your own voice over those first four or five books. And for me, I wrote Civil Terror Gridlock, and it didn't do too well. My first couple of, I guess they would be called my beta readers, they're like, are you sure you want to write a whole, I mean, you put a lot of time into this, but this is really not, it doesn't grab me. All of your characters sound the same, was a complaint. My dialogue all sounded like me. And it didn't, the pacing was all off, and there was a bunch of things I didn't know. I just didn't know. So I think that's common for a lot of new authors. And what I would suggest is just, keep at it. Keep the persistence going. Take people's feedback with a grain of salt, but just keep writing and keep doing the best you can to improve.
Amazing. That's fantastic. Thank you. That was,
Yeah.
I try to ask folks, kind of if they have advice, and you get right to it. Now, were there, as you kind of were getting interested in writing and writing, were there authors that were, that you were reading and kind of taking anything from, or that you were, really just liked what they were doing?
Yeah, about 10 years before I started writing, I really got into that Dan Brown book, The Da Vinci Code. And I think Dan does a great job of making writing look pretty easy. He just sucks you right in from the first word. And he's got conspiracy, and he's got the pacing just spot on, and he's got these puzzles in the story. And so you're thinking while you're reading. And these characters, they all sound different, and you don't know where the plot is going, and there's these twists, and he does so many things in that 400 and whatever pages. And I got done with that, and I'm like, that is an experience. I feel so good after reading. I couldn't wait to pick it back up every day when it's time to read. So that was something I wanted to kind of shoot for in my writing career. I want people to have that same type of experience. I also enjoyed most of J.D. Barker's early books, The Fourth Monkey, and some of the other ones that he's written since then, the fifth this and the sixth that. The way he kind of draws you in, and he's got these incredibly complex characters, and you feel like you're in there, you're in their mind, even though it's like you're in the mind of a sick and twisted killer. He puts you right there, and it's scary, but exhilarating at the same time. And then I also enjoyed all of J.K. Rowling's books, especially the last two, the big thick ones, the Harry Potter books. For me, those were, I just got lost in that world, and enjoyed being part of those characters and everything. And it's definitely something to shoot for me as an author.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Now you've written several novels, and they're all, kind of thrillers along those lines. What draws you to that genre?
I like to write what I read, and I don't read romance. I've tried. It doesn't grab me, and it's formulaic, and it's predictable for me. I know there's a lot of people out there who love romance, but that's just not my. It's not something that like vibrates with me or resonates with me. So I like books that are very fast paced. They make you think. And they generally have at least one big plot twist that I couldn't see coming. Most books that I read, I can kind of foretell the plot twist, and I see what the author is doing and he or she is foretelling, and I'm like, okay, that's probably for this, and I'm usually right. But when they can trick me and they have an ending or some plot twist, even if it's in the middle or something, they do that, and it's unexpected for me. I like that. And I also like a little bit of humor sprinkled in. And if the author can get me to like cry about something because I love their character so much, that's something that I shoot for as well. And if a thriller is done right, all of that should happen. It should be a very emotional journey for you, in my opinion. And it takes you through these arcs for the characters and the plot and everything. And it should be an experience that it's again unexpected and something that you can kind of relish. And you get done and you're like, wow, that was a good story. I'm gonna go tell all my friends about this book. They got to read it. So that's what I like about thrillers.
Awesome. Now your work kind of gets into these terrifyingly real things that could happen. Does ever kind of get in your head when you're writing these stories and just kind of like, oh, like just kind of like an uneasy feeling?
I try to take realistic technologies again that are either here or coming online soon, and I take like Jake is a normal guy in very unpredictable and dangerous situations, but he doesn't quit. Jake's not a quitter, so I put him in these impossible situations. I try to get him to make impossible choices, or he's in a scenario where it's like A or B, and both of them suck. And no matter what he does, something bad's going to happen. And it's that type of a scenario. And I just try to keep that pace going, and then see where the characters lead me to go.
Right on. So how do you start the research for these, and kind of what does that research look like?
So, at the beginning, I spent a lot of time online, and I would I have a lot of ideas that kind of float around in my head, like a lot of authors do. And so, I meditate. I get ideas. A lot of times, I wake up in the morning and I just kind of lay there for 10 or 15 minutes and just think and kind of get connected to the universe. And ideas can pop into my head at any time. And so, if I feel like it's a good one, I'll get up and I'll write it down. And it might be something while I'm writing the story where I don't know exactly what's going to happen for a particular scene, but I might have a general sense of what's going to happen overall, but I don't know the details. And so I might just sit there and think, all these, ruminate about these different potential outcomes or pieces for a given chapter that I might be writing on a particular day. And sometimes I get these cool ideas and they just pop into my head, and it's the universe or my muse or whatever you want to call it. And I'll write those down and I'll integrate that into, the day's activities.
Awesome. Now you have a new book coming out this October. Can you tell me a little about Blackout, a Jake Bendel thriller?
Yeah, so Blackout is basically it's Jake Bendel, and he's in his third time kind of saving a bunch of people. And it's fast paced, and it starts out with a presidential assassination, and then the power grid is threatened, but it's not terrorism this time. The first couple of books were more terrorist. This is not terrorism. This is strategy, and this is kind of a higher level antagonist kind of thinking. She is doing good for the planet by killing the president and allowing, countries to kind of come in and take over our country. And it's really not the fictional stuff that's scary for me. It's that this entire all of these things are like they're possible. These things are reasonably, these are all vulnerabilities that I've identified kind of in my 35 years as a civil engineer. I don't want these things to happen. This is a work of fiction, but it's to me, that's the scary part, is that this kind of stuff could happen to us.
Now, How have you used your background in civil engineering to influence these books? Are you using it just kind of as a foundation to build from?
Yeah, I at first when I wrote Gridlock, I thought, okay, this would be cool. Back in the 80s when Tom Cruise was there with Top Gun, I went and watched Top Gun like a lot of people, and I was like, yeah, I got out and I'm like, yeah, I want to be a fighter pilot and I'm motivated. I'm going to go be, serve our country. And if you look back, there was like a spike in people applying to be in the Navy back then in 86 or 87, whenever it was. So I thought, maybe if I'm good at this, excuse me, people will read this and go, hey, I didn't even know what civil engineering was. I want to be a civil engineer. So I thought, let me put a bunch of cool stuff in there. Let me put, housing design and water and roads and bridges and all the stuff that civil engineers work on. And the problem I had at first was like, this is not like super exciting compared to like an FBI agent where you've got, you're tracking down a serial killer, or it's a medical thriller and there's some kind of a disease that only the doctor knows the solution for or whatever. And if we can get this thing and we can save this and blah, 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 and there's your plot. It was challenging for me to kind of take civil engineering concepts and integrate them into the story. And just as an example, in the second book, The Waterborne, there's a scene where Jake and what we think is the antagonist, Victor Johnston, is in the basement, and there's somebody there's a female down there, a captive, and she has a hood on and she's bleeding and there's bugs and it's dark and it's dusty and it's not a fun place to be. But Jake, in the middle of all this, under pressure, he notices that the whole basement is being held up by a single 4x4 column, which people used to do when they built basements, and that's totally under designed. And so there's a huge load on that one column. So he's like, okay, I calculate if I have this many bullets and I can chip away this much wood in each, if I can fire at this and boom, 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 boom. And he starts chipping away at this, and then the beam buckles and it collapses, and he's able to kind of save the person and move on. But it's those types of things, getting creative to try to, how can you integrate civil engineering stuff into a story? And I think I've pretty much used all of them in these three books. Gonna be hard
Awesome.
to come up with more, because there's not a lot. There's not honestly, there's not a lot there. Like an FBI agent or a police officer or an attorney or something, where you have unlimited fodder to pick from.
Now you've come back to Jake Bendel as a protagonist. Now, what draws you to him? Like, what makes you kind of want to keep more telling more stories with him?
So yeah, great question. The first book, he loses his wife. There's a whole subplot with his wife. So the first book, he loses his wife, and so he's grieving. If you lose your best friend, your spouse, you're not going to be in a good place. And then when all this other crap happens to you, it was good emotionally, from a ingredients standpoint, to put him through all that. The second book, he's still grieving, but now he's like depressed and he's dealing with alcohol, and all these other things are happening during the waterborne fiasco. Now in book three, we have the potential for his wife to maybe have had a falsified death in book one. I don't want to give away too much, but there's a whole nother subplot arc going on with his wife there. Book four, which will be the final Jake Bendel book, and I'm probably going to set that in the future, like 20 years. He's going to be much older, and I don't know if he's going to make it out. So that'll probably be it for his tenure. But I like writing female protagonists, strong female protagonists. I've been married 35 years also. I've raised two daughters, and so I'd like to think that I'm kind of in tune more than most guys. Got to be careful how I say this. To how a woman might think or behave, in some sense, instances, more than a typical guy. Maybe I'll just leave it at that before I put my foot too far in my mouth. And I'm gonna have a spin-off series where we have like Jessica or Jessie, I don't have her name yet. She's going to be mentored by Jake, and she's going to be in her mid-30s, and she'll continue the civil engineering adventures.
Awesome. That's fantastic. So what do you hope with this book and your other books? What do you hope folks take away from after reading them?
Yeah, so I'd like to like some of the early Tom Clancy books, integrate some actual knowledge, real world knowledge, into the story. So Tom Clancy, it might be, how a submarine works or how a certain machine gun operates or whatever. In my books, you're going to learn a little bit about the civil engineering field and how we kind of think and operate. And a lot of it is kind of behind the scenes. We drink water, but we don't know how our water gets to our tap or to the toilet or to the sink or to the shower. We don't know what happens after you flush the toilet. Not that you need to know all that. We don't know what keeps the house from falling down. We don't know what keeps the building standing upright in heavy winds or earthquakes. So I kind of give you a little peek behind the curtain on that. But that's kind of to satisfy your logical mind. I also hope that you come away engaged with my characters and rooting for the protagonist and rooting against the antagonist and are, thoroughly satisfied that you had an unexpected read and you'll tell all your friends about it. It was like a really cool emotional experience for you.
Awesome. Have you had many opportunities to read or to kind of touch base with readers or meet fans and kind of connect with them?
Yeah, my first publicist, my first experience with this was 2018. I went to the Javits Center for, I think it's called Book Con. President Clinton was there and James Patterson doing there. They had their book, The President's Daughter, at the time. And my publicist called and they're like, "Hey, can you get out to New York? I'm out by LA." And they're like, "Can you get to New York by Saturday? We'd like to have a book signing with you at our booth, and we have 100 of your books, and we're going to be giving away 100 books." And I flew out there, and the next day I sat there and I watched the author in front of me sign 100 books because I'd never signed books before. So they're like, "Yeah, don't use a regular pen, use a Sharpie." I'm like, "Okay, Sharpie, got it. And this is how you sign, and you do this and that." And she gave me some cool tips. So and then I sat down and was like feet to the fire, thrown in the deep end. And I met 100 readers, all signing and finding out what they're interested in and stuff. And that was like a really fun experience. And then every book launch that comes out, we have, a book signing event and people show up and it's a chance to meet readers and they tell me what they liked about, the previous books, what they're looking forward to in this one, why they like what I write, things like that. And so that's one of the things that kind of motivates me to keep writing.
That's awesome, and I think you kind of hinted at it. So, what are you working on next? Is it the final book for Jake, or is
That's
that in the future still?
yeah, that's out there. But I have my agent has three books right now
Oh,
that are out
wow.
on submission. So, and then I've got three other books that I'm working on simultaneously. So I have a book called The Duplicity Design, which is all set in Big Bear. It's a thriller, but it's also being called like light horror. It's a psychological thriller and it's pretty dark and it deals with some tough issues that the protagonist is going through. And I think that's going to be a very interesting book, and it's going to be a different slightly different audience, I think, once that finds a publisher. And then I have a series, an 8-book series that I'm 2 books into. It's called Time Goggles. And the premise there is the 31-year-old protagonist, strong female protagonist, MIT professor, she invents something where you can see into the past. There's like these picture like VR goggles. And it's like, but you have to be in the same exact spot. You can't like see other places and it's not time travel. So it's like here you are sitting at your computer desk in, 2026, June, whatever, today. And then it's like exactly the same spot 1 year ago. today, 1 year ago, today, 1 year ago. And she's out there testing her goggles and she witnesses a quadruple homicide. And, that would be like super shocking for anybody, but don't want to give too much of the story away, but it's about her journey there on uncovering these crimes. It's a crime novel. Each novel has to do with a couple different crimes that she solves using these time goggles. Because imagine if you can go back to where somebody was killed and maybe the guy was running away and he threw the, I say guy because most murderers are guys, but maybe he threw the gun in the lake, and so nobody saw that, and there's no ring camera to see that. But if you can go back and like watch him running down the street, watch him throw the gun away in the lake, you can go, hey, police, CSI, go look here, and they can scrape the bottom of the lake and they'll find the gun, and then that could be admitted as evidence, and maybe this guy's one less murderer you have on the street. And I have a whole series arc for that. I've got all these character arcs. I've got a very detailed series outline for that. So I'm excited about that. And then I have a book that I'm writing. It's all set on Maui. It's a couple years after the Lahaina fires. And this one has to do with some technology and nanobots where it alters your memory. And that's going to be a fun one. Then I have the last one I'll just briefly share is tentatively called Precipice Fallen. And this is a scientific thriller. It's a geologist out in the desert, and he discovers evidence that there were two previous nuclear holocausts in the last couple hundred thousand years. Humans, Homo sapiens, are about 300 to 350,000 years old. You and me, people just like us with our intellect and our bone structure and everything, have been wandering around the earth for 350,000 years. And our written history only goes back like 12,000 years. So, I'm asking, what if between 350,000 years ago and 12,000 years ago, what if there were civilizations of Homo sapiens that rose and fall? And they ended a nuclear holocaust. So that's kind of the, and what if it's happening again? We're on the precipice of so many great things right now. AI, quantum computing, Western medicine and stuff. But we also have a bunch of people out there who have their finger on the button for World War III. So it's like there's this duality, I think, that we have the potential here to be so much more than we are, but we also have the potential to blow ourselves up. So I kind of play around with that as a premise.
Awesome. You definitely have a lot for your fans to look forward to
It's
say the
fun.
least.
It's fun. I just, again, I like telling the stories and I like getting the feedback, and I like trying to entertain people. That's kind of, I've determined that's my purpose on however many years left I have on the planet.
That's amazing. Now, where can so your the new book Blackout comes out, I think, October 6th.
Yep, October 6th.
Where can they track that down? Just the usual places, or
Yeah, it's available for anywhere you normally buy books, but I would recommend just going to my website, jlukebeneke.com. All the information and links are there for pre-order. It's available for pre-order in hardcover, ebook, and audiobook. And if you sign up for my newsletter, I'm giving away some chapters to the audiobook early. Brad Wills, the gentleman, former Broadway actor who voiced the first two Jake Bendel books. He was kind enough to do the third book, even though he's sunsetting and kind of working his way into retirement. And he just finished last week, so I'm proofing all of his chapter. I'm like on chapter 37 right now, and he's done an amazing job. This is I don't even feel like I wrote this book. I'm just so engrossed in the story. I'm like, what's going to happen next? I feel like I'm there with my popcorn, and I'm like, oh wait, this is a book I wrote. It's so weird. I feel detached, because I wrote it a couple years ago, and he just does such a good job acting. All the different voices he puts into it, and he's an amazingly talented guy.
that is awesome. And last question, what's the best way for people to kind of follow you and your work? Are you on social media, or is there a platform you prefer people to follow you on?
I have a lot of content on Instagram, and if you're interested in following me, I would suggest you just hop on Instagram, follow me there. I also have a lot of cool like magic trick videos I do on there. I do these little video effects and things, and I like turn water into take regular healthy water and I turn it into something green. And just there's no voiceover or anything. It's just, how did this water get green? And I'm sitting there reading the Waterborne book, like, Or I have some shots where there's multiple versions of me and I'm saying different things. And I like to do voiceovers and, are you matey with the character with the pirate or something like that? Matey, or whatever. I was reading your new book and I couldn't put it down. I was afraid I was going to die before I read your entire book, boy, or whatever. I like to kind of put the voices in there, and again, it's all part of the entertaining. So you have fun. Enjoy the videos.
Awesome. I can't thank you enough, Lou, for making some time to talk.
Yeah.
Blackout comes out October 6th, and I wish you all the best with it. And I hope
Thank
we
you.
can connect
Appreciate that.
again when you start, get your neck booked out.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to be back. Best of luck to you too. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. I want to thank Luke Benecki for coming on and talking about Blackout, his book coming out October 6th, which you can pre-order now. And it sounds like that's the way you're going to want to go, is to pre-order through his website, because he's got some awesome perks for doing that. And just a great conversation, fascinating stuff, really interesting guy, and the kind of thriller kind of angle that is the scariest, I think, where it's based in reality and where it's just kind of two steps from what could happen. And I think that's amazing. You can find all of his stuff at jlukebenecki.com, and specifically stuff about Blackout at jlukebenecki.com/blackout. And once more, that is JLUKEBENNECKE.com/blackout. And as he said, you can follow him on Instagram, where he has a ton of content on there. And I thank him one last time for making some time for me. As for myself, you can find all of my other podcasts and interviews and everything at spookychris.com and on your least favorite platform for podcasts. You can find all of the links to my books at spookychris.com as well. There's a whole parcel of them. And all my reviews and everything else at spookychris.com. And I thank you for coming along on the journey. And I will speak with you and someone else pretty cool soon. Take care.